Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, and I'm joined by Madison.
Yeah, I was hoping for a few better games to talk about this week, but unfortunately we do not. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, and before we get started, this show, as always, is brought to you by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. And if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League, which you can find out more details about on our Twitter page. So, yeah, like you say, it's been a pretty shit sort of two. We didn't manage to get together to do one a week ago, so we've kind of got three games to recap here, and none of them are particularly pleasant. Worth pointing out at this point as well that that Anthony can't be with us tonight because he is in the process of moving into a new house. So I guess good luck to him with that. And we'll have to do him proud in his absence. But yeah, I mean, we might as well dive into it. We've got three games to kind of talk about. One of them...
Yeah, we do.
One of them we'll kind of just skim over because I think it's kind of out of everybody's memory now. The 1-1 draw against Udinese at San Siro. That was back on the 2nd of April, so that feels like, you know, that feels like ages ago now. Wait, no, I've got that wrong. Did we recap that
April
one? I mean Parma. The 1-1 draw. 20th. I meant Parma. The 1-1 draw with Parma is the one that we haven't talked about.
I was going to say, what are you talking about?
I know, I had the list of fixtures and just looked at the wrong one. I just remember it being a 1-1 draw. Anyway,
you know what
happened?
It's because you haven't been on for like two, three weeks.
Yeah. I know.
So you're just, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Thought that we got all 3 points when Castillejo scored with just over 20 minutes to go. But then Bruno Alves equalised for Parma with 3 minutes to go. It was, you know, we had more of the ball as per usual, but we really struggled to penetrate. It was just like another really lacklustre performance from what I can remember of it. It's one of those games that, like, if we're looking at turning points in terms of where we've found ourselves now, which we'll come on to, with top four qualification now more unlikely than likely, you've got to see games like that out.
Yeah, you do. It's pretty disappointing to watch us drop points to Parma like that. We knew that they were going into that game with a must-win mentality. Like, even in the media leading up to the game, I think their goalie was just like, they got lucky the last time around, they're not gonna be lucky this time. And we just, the games leading up, we just have not been looking convincing. And I think the last time that we looked convincing was against Juventus, and we lost that game. But we still looked put together that game. Like, if we would have played Juventus this past weekend, they would have destroyed us. Like, there was, you know. So since that Juve game, it's just been downhill. I think we were lucky to get the win against Lazio 3-4 weeks ago. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was at like 6:30 a.m. my time. So I got up at like 8 o'clock and watched the last 20 minutes of the game. I actually had a dream that we were winning 3-0, so I didn't wake up enough to watch it. And I was like, I'll turn on the last 10 minutes. And I was like, oh, wait. Oh, yes.
Oh, man. But you wish you'd just slept through it.
No, for sure.
Yeah, you're right, though. In everything you say, I just feel like the momentum and the confidence has just been completely sucked out of the team, and you saw it in that. You know, we were relying on individuals to produce a bit of quality to make the difference. We thought we might have enough to earn us our second win in a row when Castillejo scored, but just being unable to hold out. And it was a pretty damaging one, was that. because we were coming up to a run of games where we were still sort of in pole position for the top four, and it was very simple going into our last six games of the season in terms of just handling our own business. You know, having beaten Lazio, you think, okay, we'll beat Parma, even though it might be a tricky game. You can then possibly take a draw against Torino, you know, as long as they don't win to close the gap or even overtake us. And then Bologna looks like a winnable game at home. Fiorentina is still sort of settling in under Montella. Then we've got Frosinone at home and Spal to end the season. All of a sudden you're thinking, top four, if we can get through that Parma game, is looking pretty good. And here we are now, thanks to the one league game, but two games that have followed since, thinking that basically it's almost out the window now. And yeah, like I say, you look at turning points in a season. If we'd have held on to get the 3 points there, perhaps that might have been the kind of confidence boost that we were after. But we can't make excuses anymore. We certainly can't make excuses for Gattuso. Again, which we'll come on to. Game management has been pretty dreadful recently. And, you know, with the 2-0 defeat to Torino last night, which we'll discuss in more detail, it's now 5 points out of our last 24 available in Serie A, which is just, you look at that and think we actually don't deserve the top four.
Right.
And
I was even thinking, when I was watching the game yesterday, I was like, I don't know if I want to play in Champions League. Like, we're going to get destroyed. If this team shows up next year, we would get obliterated in Champions League. And is it worth the money that we're going to get? Like, financial fair play, I don't think is going to, our sanctions are not going to depend on this year's Champions League, because it's from Berlusconi's last transfer when we got Bacca, and then the next two, I think, ending with the Young's summer. And so it has nothing to do with Elliott management. That's something that I've actually learned recently. I was like, well, it doesn't make sense. They clear the debt. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And this has been stuff that's been going on for a while. That's a whole other conversation to have, though. But I don't think that... I think this summer is going to be very important, because I have a feeling that even if we don't qualify for Champions League, I think that Elliott's going to splash some cash. And next year, if we don't qualify for Champions League, we're going to face sanctions again. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's the kind of world that we live in soccer now, or football, because of financial fair play. It's a gamble. If you spend the money, you have to qualify. If not, you have to recoup that money back or you get in trouble.
Yeah, we found that out the hard way under, obviously, Yong Hong Lee's, I'm going to call it in inverted commas, ownership, because it seems like he never actually really owned the club, given that he defaulted on the debt repayment, etc. But yeah, as you alluded to, basically financial fair play works on a bit of a delay. So that's the idea, that when we go to the Court of Arbitration once again, which seems likely, it will work in our favour, because we can, or rather Elliott management can say, these are accounts from the previous owners, and, you know, this is how we've been running the club better since we came into power. And hopefully that gives a bit of leverage when it comes to any potential sanctions. But, you know, as you say, it's the risk that you take nowadays. You either invest heavily in your playing squad to try and bridge the gap, to try and get into the top four. You know, amazingly, in the summer of 2017, we bought, 11 players for a total of around about 150 million euros. And that was seen by many as the mass investment we needed to get up there. And in the end, we only just managed to secure a Europa League spot. And now here we are, having not really had such a big player turnover last summer. And partially because of the failures of other teams, but also because, you know, we had such a great start to 2019. We found ourselves, or we did, whether you say that we are or not, I don't know. But in a top four race, and that's interesting. But yeah, I personally think that Leonardo and Maldini and all the guys behind the scenes, Gazidis, will want to run the ship in the correct manner. I don't think they have any intentions of getting into financial fair play trouble, because they've probably seen the negative effect that that's had on Milan and other clubs. So I think that a lot of our business in the summer will be dependent on where we finish, and that's only fair, to be honest, because if we don't finish in the top four now, you've got to assume that we'll have a new manager to hire and we'll have to pay Gattuso out. So that's going to be, you know, something that's definitely worth considering. And then, you know, you hire a new manager and they might want to get rid of some players and they might want to sign their own players, and it's whether he gets the backing if we're in the Europa League. So, yeah, the simple answer would have been just to qualify for the top four, but...
You'd think it'd be the simple answer.
We never do it the easy way, though, do we?
No.
And also, I mean... And again, we're saying this sort of based on recent form, but if you were to perhaps rewind 2 months, I think if you'd have done a poll then on whether Gattuso should be manager next season, it would almost be a complete opposite to what it is now. It might have been 80-20 saying yes, keep him, but now it's probably like less than 20% who would keep him for next season. Myself included, I mean, I've been very vocal on this podcast and on social media about the idea that Gattuso's learning on the job and that he deserves patience, because the thing that's ruined our momentum in the past is changing a key figure like the head coach, and it's kind of destroyed any idea of stability that we had. Don't get me wrong, some managers like Inzaghi, unfortunately, it just clearly wasn't working. Montella had kind of made his own position untenable. But then you look at a little bit further back at managers like Seedorf, who had a clear system and a clear way of wanting to play. And actually, we played some pretty good football under him. But he wasn't given the time, he wasn't given the patience, because results were demanded now. And that's always going to be the problem with this club, is that if you're not, you know, you've got a year to sort it out, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's all you're getting. So basically, we're going to keep rotating managers until one of them gets it right. And we've no idea who that's going to be. And it might even still be Gattuso this season. And if we finish in the top four still, then what? Where do you go this summer? Can you really sack someone for turning around the ship like that? I don't know.
I mean, I think with the way the season has turned out, you can absolutely sack him, because if we kept on playing the way that we started the year, we would be in third place. We would have jumped Inter. We would have kept our momentum going, and he would have shown that he can carry a team. But he has shown that he can't. He's missing something, that he can't do it. And I heard something interesting on the radio the other day. I listened to Sirius XM FC on my way to work. And they were talking about, since we fired Ancelotti, we have hired all inexperienced coaches. Starting with Massimiliano Allegri, who still did well in terms of being our manager, but he was in the start of the banter era, and Berlusconi cut him because Berlusconi was ruthless. And so I just, you know, since then, it's been just downhill since pretty much Ancelotti left. And we just haven't been hiring experienced managers. So you can't blame anyone but management for making these mistakes. And it's not Leo and Maldini's fault, because Gattuso finished the season great last season. And so they had no reason not to continue with him. And this season showed that he would be good in maybe like a management position. I don't know about a technical coaching position, because he clearly cannot motivate the players.
Yeah, and that was the one thing that he always had going for him, was that he made the players give every single ounce of energy for
right.
it. And that just seems to have gone a little bit. I think you can see even on the players' faces and in their performances that they've even lost that bit of confidence in him now. And it comes back to, and, you know, I don't want to like sound like I'm on a high horse here, but when I've spoken before about his questionable man management, I wonder how much of it comes back to, if you look at that Inter game that we lost and the fallout that happened after that, you know, with Kessier and Belia, and, you know, all of a sudden the attention was drawn to potential problems within the squad. Everyone was a little bit surprised about how harshly Gattuso handled that situation. And then since then, even, you know, when results haven't been going our way, he's been giving some pretty baffling interviews. You know, he's blasted the players. I think after the Torino game, he said that the players were embarrassing the club. And it's like, mate, we're in the middle of a race for the top four. We're still not out of it. You can't be going and saying that. It's as if it's all over. I think what we're witnessing is slowly yet another Milan manager who we all want to succeed. He's slowly crumbling under the pressure, and his identity is going with it in terms of the way that he wants to play, and the players' belief has gone with it as well. And you know, now you're looking at these last four games thinking, well, we'll be lucky to win two of them, and we might even finish something like seventh.
That would be such a buzzkill.
Well, but I'm at the point now where I almost would rather us not qualify for the Europa League, because I think this season, it wasn't, you can't blame it as a distraction, but it was more alarming than anything else that we managed to get knocked out from such a comfortable position in the Europa League. You know, that was a massive dent at the time, and I'm just thinking,
but it's kind of really like what's happening in the season. It's like what's happening in, you know, in Serie A. We were comfortable in fourth position pretty much, I want to say, the majority of the season we've been in the top four, which hasn't happened for some time. Mm-hmm. And now at the end, when it counts, we are failing. And, you know, I like Gattuso, but from the get-go, I have not been about him. I have wanted an experienced manager at our club for some time now. I liked Mihalovic. I think he was inexperienced, but I think the biggest mistake that any ownership group made was firing him, because I thought that he had us playing some good football.
He's another one who, a little bit like Gattuso in the sense that he kind of made his players run through walls. He had Bakker looking like a really good striker. You think back to that team.
Yeah, Kuchka playing amazing.
Oh, yeah.
He scored some snipes.
Even Mbaye Niang in that team had his moments. Right. I remember the Derby performance when him and Bakker absolutely ripped Inter apart and we won 3-0. And he had, you know, Alex was solid back then. He achieved a pretty good level with that squad, but he was kind of like Gattuso in the sense that he couldn't really settle on a system towards the business end of the season.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was his undoing. It'd be interesting to see where we are or where we would be if we still had him in charge. But, you know, all these managers in Serie A just seem to kind of go from one club to the other, and Mihalovic seems to be no exception to that. But you look at the managers now that are doing really well. Gasperini with Atalanta, who have actually moved up to fourth with the win tonight. Fair play to them. They're having an amazing season. Gasperini, though, any what you'd call a big club that he's been at, he hasn't done it. And then you look at Walter Mazzarri at Torino. Again, you know, any other big opportunity he's had, he's not really done it. And yet there they are in this comfort zone, and they're getting results. And I've seen a lot of people say go after Gasperini this summer, but first of all, he's old, so he's not a long-term option at all. Secondly, why would his track record at any of the big sides suggest that we should go for him?
You know, Antonio Conte is not a long-term option either. He's going to stay for 3 years and dip out.
Not typically, but if in that 2 years he can get us back established into the top four, then we'll be able to attract someone good when he does want to leave. Whereas now, I feel like if we finish sixth or something and sack Gattuso, Conte won't come. Pochettino definitely won't come. We'll end up being stuck with somebody like Di Francesco, which would be an absolutely dreadful appointment. It's just,
what about Allegri?
Well, I mean, we might as well talk about that now, actually. His comments. Go on.
Yeah, I've been thinking it for, since he has not committed to Juve, I've been thinking it, and I have not said anything about it, but I've just been thinking, what if he comes back? What if he comes back? I was so happy when he got fired, but I was a, what you call a new soccer fan. I was ignorant, and what I would do to have him back in charge of our team. And his comments were amazing. He was just like, it was something like, you know, you left Milan and you're at Juve now. Would you ever go back? And he goes, just wait. In a few more years, I'll be back at Milan. I was just like, well, he's very confident. Mm. And let's just skip the few years and jump to right now. Mm. Or if you want to wait a couple more years, let's hire Conte this summer. Bring in Allegri after. Do a whole Juve thing. And I think Massimiliano Allegri might stay here longer than he stayed at Juve, because I feel like this would be more of a project, and Juve cheats.
They were interesting comments. Basically, just to give a bit of context for those who haven't seen it, he was asked about when he left Milan for Juventus in the first place on a program called Che Tempo Ci Fa, which I haven't listened to or heard of before, I'll be honest, but these quotes are legit, apparently. He responded to that by saying that he basically will go back to Milan. He said, a couple of years and I'll be back. So like you say, it's affirmative. It is going to happen. I mean, his track record since leaving, obviously he's the last manager to win a trophy with Milan. To win a title with Milan. He won Serie A in 2010-11. And then from there with Juve, has gone on to achieve some pretty amazing stuff. He's won 11 trophies with them in basically, well, it's four seasons. Yeah, what will be four seasons. Five Serie A titles, obviously, Coppa Italia, two Supercoppas, and then also got them to the Champions League final in both 2015 and 2017. So you really can't argue with that. I was one who was annoyed when Allegri was sacked, because I think that he was a victim of circumstance, in that we all saw the way that Berlusconi ran the club in those sort of right. 2 years following winning the Scudetto. Allegri was not the man at fault. He was basically a scapegoat for some horrific mismanagement off the field. The squad that he inherited when he took charge, and the one that he won the league with in 2010-11, and the squad that he ended with when he got sacked in January 2014, are just absolutely streets apart.
Like, and we finished third that season, I think. It's not even like we were doing poorly. We started out in 16th. Do you remember that? We got 8 points in the first like six or seven games or something.
Relegation and then battle.
Yeah, and then El Shaarawy just went ham. Oh, mm-hmm. Man, what a great season that was.
It was actually quite a fun season. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we finished third, and then he got sacked, I think, in January.
Yeah, it's not good. But yeah, I mean, he won four consecutive doubles then at Juve from 2015 through to 2018, and he's like the only coach to ever have achieved this in the top five European leagues, so you can't argue with his track record. Obviously, we tweeted the article out earlier with the quotes, and what I was amazed by is the amount of people who replied to it saying no. No, no, thank you. Nope, it's not true, he made a joke. No thanks, please no. Thank you, next. Like, what? Really this kind of, I don't want to say ignorant, but...
Ignorant. I don't know if people are just making jokes or don't think he's a good manager, but I mean, he's he was able to create such a good defense at Juve. And, I mean, Conte helped with that a little bit, but I definitely think that when Allegri came, they got a lot better. And I think with the youth talent that we have on our team, I think he could do some amazing things with our defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, he strikes me as the kind of coach who could definitely get the best out of Caldara.
Right.
And Calabria. I mean, he's kind of made Decilio look like an adequate fullback at times. And then obviously got Romagnoli, who's fantastic to build around. I'm fairly sure he'd be able to convince Bakayoko to come and then obviously get the best out of players like Kessier. I could see him turning Kessier into a Pogba type of player. And then obviously you got Paqueta. Yeah, he'd have players to work with. I don't think anybody's saying our squad is bad. That's something that, you know, should be clarified. As much as the players are to blame for the recent sort of capitulation, I don't think anybody doubts the ability of the squad as a whole. Like you say, we've been in the top four for about 80% of the season, if not more. So the ability is obviously there. What we need is a manager, I guess, or something, a project perhaps, for everybody to collectively believe in. And I don't think the rumours surrounding Gattuso's future in recent weeks have necessarily helped that.
I think the Torino game this weekend sealed his fate.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that now.
Do you want to talk about Lazio first, or do you want to...
No, well, all right, we'll talk about Lazio first. As much as I wanted to come on this pod and talk for about 10 minutes about what an incredible time I had going to the game and that kind of thing, it is, and I mean, I've watched Huddersfield for like 40 games this season. It is literally the worst 90 minutes of football I've seen. Our performance against Lazio was absolutely embarrassing. It was really bad. I think the players went into it with a little bit of fear based on what had happened before. Lazio approached the game perfectly. You know, we conceded an absolutely shocking goal. Like, to have a corner and to once again not beat the first man, ball's cleared, all of a sudden they're going through. It's like, where is anybody tracking back? Correa's run wasn't tracked properly either. And don't get me wrong, it was a nice finish. I don't think that that he should be beating the keeper from there, but, you know, and that was it. We need to score two, and to be honest, we weren't even going to score one. We could have been playing for another 90 minutes, and I don't think we'd have scored. It was really lackluster, and I said on Twitter afterwards, like, paying hundreds of pounds to go and watch the team like I have done in the past lose. You know, I've seen us lose 1-0 to Inter in my first derby that I went to, but we absolutely battered them towards the end of the game. It was when Balotelli came on as a substitute and had about four shots on target, and they were really lucky to win that game. And then I went to the Coppa final against Juve when we lost 1-0 to the Morata goal in extra time. And again, we absolutely matched them. We played well. I don't mind spending hundreds of pounds to go and watch us lose when we give it a go. And it just felt really disappointing that this time came away from the stadium thinking we actually didn't really look arsed about that at all. It was either that or the players were playing with absolutely no instruction whatsoever.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I mean, I went to the Derby this year for Everton. Mm-hmm. And my thing was, I said to my girlfriend, as long as they look good, I don't care what happens. Because, like, I want a result. Is Everton going to beat Liverpool? No. But they look good, you know? So you don't want to fly, you know... I don't know how far for us, it'd be halfway around the world to fly to go see AC Milan play Inter Milan. And that'd be a huge gamble with the way that we have looked in the last 6 or 7 years. We're going to do it. But, I mean, I completely understand what you're saying, because you don't want to spend all that money and have the team just look like complete shit. And
it's not about, I mean, just to clarify, it's not about the money. It's not about the money. It's what the money kind of represents. You know what I mean? It's working hard for a couple of months or a few months before the trip to be able to afford to go.
Right.
And looking forward to this one night for so long, because I hadn't been for the best part of a year. And then just to be let down like that, and then have to go home the next day. It's just like, it's upsetting more than anything, you know. I will always stay to applaud the team off or whatever, but that's the first time that I've genuinely thought that maybe they didn't really deserve it.
I don't think that we deserved that game. I think that we looked like zombies out there, and I agree, they looked scared, and maybe it was the abuse coming from the Lazio fans, so Bakayoko and Kessie weren't like really feeling it 100%. I mean, if people are insulting you for 90 minutes, it's really hard to block that out. So I don't know if that affects their game somewhat. Definitely the jersey fine for that bullshit thing, you know, like that. I think that that probably had more of an effect on everything that happened then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said to you guys in the last podcast that we did, I thought it was stupid of Bakayoko and Kessie to do that, you know, after we just won such an important game, to then make all the headlines about them rather than about the team. Was only going to motivate Lazio in this cup semi-final, which perhaps people would say in hindsight we'd rather, you know, have the 3 points in the league than go to another cup final. But personally, I wanted us to win both, and I felt like it kind of put that in a bit of jeopardy. We were made to. I mean, there is absolutely no justification at all for what came from the Lazio fans. I mean, obviously, I was in the stadium. Where I was in the Curva Sud, it was very loud. So I'll be honest, I didn't hear all of what was, you know, what apparently went on. But when the crowd was quiet and when Bakayoko got the ball in particular, you could hear things coming from, and people in the Curva Sud were kind of looking at each other as if to say, "Can you hear that?" Because they're at the opposite end of the ground, basically, the Lazio fans in the third tier, so they were a tier above where we were. And like I say, with all the noise of the stadium and stuff, it wasn't perfectly audible, but you could certainly hear it at some points. And the stadium announcer twice asked for Lazio fans to stop, which suggests to me that, you know, over by the halfway line, it was very, very audible what was going on. The referee, for me, should have taken the players off, because we're not talking about a group of 20 or 30 fans here that are making a little bit of a noise. The league report today said that they suspect around 90% of the 4,000 fans took part in the racist chanting, which is absolutely staggering for a number of reasons.
Yeah, it is.
That, I mean, honestly, you don't even get 4,000 racists in one place at rallies and stuff like that.
Well, you haven't been to America anytime.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But I mean, there were a lot of complaints before the game, particularly from Lazio fans who were actually quite near where me and my mate were having a beer before the game, about the way that they were being treated. You know, they were throwing stuff at police. They were saying stuff to the police because they were penned in sort of one of the small car park things. And you could hear them chanting and all that kind of thing. There was nothing malicious in what they were chanting. But then a few more fans arrived, close to the Curva Sud where everyone goes in, and you know, there's a lot of guys that you just don't fuck with in the Curva Sud, basically. But for some reason, some Lazio fans decided to storm down a street and start throwing flares towards the Milan end outside, you know. So that was another flashpoint. I used to think that some of these Lazio fans have the audacity to complain about being treated like animals when that is exactly what they are. And that is exactly how they deserve to be treated. Don't get me wrong, it's not every Lazio fan. You know, I know a couple of Lazio fans that are sound. But the majority of those that travelled that night were there to cause trouble. And that's exactly what happened. The only regret for me is that there weren't some Milan fans waiting for them outside ready to give them a slap. Because that's what they deserve for that kind of behaviour, to be honest. And I think that
Go ahead.
I just think that the league's punishment of giving them basically a suspended one-game partial stadium closure is the most pathetic attempt to try and suppress what happened. You know, the problems with Italian football won't go away unless the authorities recognise that they exist and deal with them appropriately. And here we are again with them kind of pussyfooting around it, and giving them a suspended sentence for me, like, and I'm not just saying this because we lost, I think that kicking them out of the competition would have sent a really, really strong message. Or if you're not going to do that, then ban them from the final. Make sure that they're not there to watch the team. Because the 90% of fans that travelled that night to see their team reach the final were involved in racist chanting, then they shouldn't be there to see the final. It's that simple.
I think it would be much more fair to ban the fans from attending the final than maybe banning the team. Mm-hmm. Now, if you really want to make a statement, you kick Lazio out and just award Atalanta the Coppa Italia. You know, I don't think that we have a right to be there because they beat us on the field.
Yeah.
Fair and square. But at some point, you've got to look at it and be like, who's in charge? What is FIFA going to do about it? Like, if Italy ever try and get a World Cup, then FIFA has to come in and be like, you guys have to clean this up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would think so. They were with Qatar, but, you know. And, I mean, Bakayoko's agent came out and was like, he's not sure if he wants to stay at AC Milan. Well, if that's true, that's super messed up because of the racial abuse that he gets. It's mm-hmm. turning players off of the league. And that, in hindsight, is ruining the entire league, which is going to ruin your national team because most of your players on the national team play in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you know, it's common sense. That's how you create better talent. So
this is the thing. If we now have created an environment where, I'm not saying racial abuse is tolerated, but where it becomes the norm and where the sanctions for doing so are not fitting of the crime, like they are at the moment, you are going to create a poisonous, toxic environment, which, quite frankly, black and ethnic minority players aren't going to want to play in. It was kind of my fear, and there was a report that basically said that Bakayoko is kind of backtracking on what he said about him wanting to come and sign for Milan permanently in the summer because of the racist abuse he's suffering. But I can kind of understand it. He's subject to personal attacks now. You know, thankfully, we don't have to play Lazio between now and the end of the season. But who's to say that he won't be targeted by other fans between now and the end of the season? That's not me, you know, having a dig at the teams that we still got to play. You just don't know because, you know, now he's a target.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... I think Lazio have the most aggressive fans in Serie A, definitely from a standpoint to how they vocalize their feelings of race and politics. But like, I don't see any of the teams that we're playing. They all seem like pretty, you know, I don't want to diss them, but like small town teams, you know, they just kind of seem like a genuine fan base who want to see their team not get relegated. And I don't see them being that aggressive to the point where they're going to do that, those kinds of things. I mean, I watched the Coppa 90 Derby days, and I watched the Roma-Lazio one.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin lives in Rome, so I was, like, talking to her about coming over for a game, and I was like, I don't know if I actually want to go to that game now. Like, that looks way too intense for my liking. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I would fly to Italy without Shannon to go to that game, because I'm not going to take her to that game. Like, that'd be, you know, I don't even feel safe to take myself.
That's the one game, I think, in Italy that has a lot of problems to do with it. Like, if you go to a Milan derby, obviously it's entirely different. The two sets of fans will walk alongside each other. You've basically got, you'll have, you know, brothers in the same family where one supports one and one supports the other. It's just so much more amicable. And, you know, the two ultra groups signed a peace pact basically saying that they weren't gonna fight, and instead they would take the fight to the stands with basically displays and tifos that insulted each other. So anything goes inside the stadium, and that's absolutely fine. It's just words on paper then. It's not actual physical. But Rome Lazio, I mean, fans have died. Fans get stabbed on the regular. The two sets of supporters have to be kept apart at all costs before the game. And it's just ridiculous. It's the kind of hostile environment that you have to question if you're actually going to watch a football match at that point, and you're not witnessing some kind of extreme sport. There's too, sometimes I think there can be too much hatred and too much poison, and both sets of fans kind of play up to the reputation of it as well. Don't get me wrong, I think if you were to go and you were to just want to go and watch the game and you knew the areas to avoid before and after the game, then you'd probably be fine and you'd have a great experience. But all it takes is to be caught up in the wrong thing and to be showing some club colours or whatever, and you never know, like, you could literally end up with a knife in you. And that is just that is just genuinely frightening. But I mean, yeah, I hear things from friends of mine who follow Milan away from home, who say that going to Naples is kind of the same thing. You know where you're not welcome. And they make it absolute hell. You know, you're kept in the stadium for like 2 hours after the game, and then you get a huge police escort to get onto your buses and stuff, but still fans wait for you, and it sounds like a nightmare there as well. But yeah, it's just...
I have heard that about going to Napoli games as well, that the fans can be a little more aggressive than you would like.
Yeah, they seem to hit anything from the north, really. Rome and Napoli is quite a big derby for that reason. You know, there's a big inferiority complex with Naples, with Napoli. Or it feels that way anyway. They just hate anything that isn't from there. Very partisan. So, yeah, I think Napoli away is one of the only ones that I wouldn't do. Now, I probably, you know, if it came to it next season, I probably wouldn't do Lazio away either, just because of the way things have been between the two clubs. Mm-hmm. But I did Lazio at home and came away unscathed, so that wasn't too bad. But, yeah, I mean, perhaps you can view it as a blessing now that we don't have a cup final to prepare for. But like I said, I was just looking forward to giving this big 10-minute account of how it was the perfect trip, and you know, we deserved to reach the final again, but it wasn't to be. But yeah, so hopefully, what's my record now? I think I've seen Milan lose like a lot more than win now. It's kind of scary.
I've seen Milan win both games when I watched them play, so I have a good record.
That's pretty good. I have to make sure that you're there the next time I go to a game.
Yeah, I mean, it was all preseason stuff, so I mean, do they really count? I don't know, but I got to yell things at Montolivo and I felt good about myself.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, man. That's the spirit. And he's still here, which is ridiculous. That just reminded me, actually, I need to book tickets for the preseason game in Cardiff against Man United. That'll be good. So yeah, that was a bit of a bummer, because of the expectation, I guess, partially. But then I think that sort of fed into that, and the Parma game fed into us entering the game against Torino last night with very little confidence. And once again, despite getting to halftime at 0-0, we just never really got going, and we deserved to lose.
I agree with you. I think that we looked better than the Coppa Italia game. I don't think we looked great. I also don't think that we deserve to lose 2-0. I think that game had some horrible calls in it. I was like half watching on our drive home because we were out of town this weekend. So I had it up on my phone and it was laggy a little bit. But I thought that, I mean, we looked semi-decent. We were getting some passes together. I think having Paqueta on the field helped. I hope that this was a wake-up call to Piontek to be like, you need to get your shit together if you want to keep on starting, because we know that Cutrone will score goals. Mm-hmm. Not like Piontek does, but he scores in critical moments. I don't like Conti. I want Abate to play instead of him. Not wishing injury on anyone, but he's injured now, so I'm going to get what I want. And unsportsmanlike conduct, red card for Romagnoli. So I use Soccer Stand, and they show why you got certain cards. Mm-hmm. And our last four cards were all unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, for arguing the referee's decisions, basically.
Like, I'm sorry. I don't think that these refs are told to favor one team over the other. But I just feel like in the last four games, we've been getting some really shitty calls towards us.
Well, I mean, you look at yesterday as a prime example. I think we had three bookings in the opening 15 minutes. I think we were on four bookings by halftime. And the thing is that... sorry, I got that wrong. We had three bookings in the opening 16 minutes. Then we had three more bookings in the second half. In the last 15 minutes. And then one of... Romagnoli's red card on top of that, which I'm not sure if it was for a second booking or not. He seemed to flash a straight red though, which does actually mean something, because if you've been booked and then you get a straight red anyway, you can get a 2-game ban for it.
But I think he was booked in the 77th minute.
Yeah, I just didn't see the ref flash a second yellow card. I thought he went straight for the red, but I think it would have been
a second. And then
the ref mocked him. It was the other way. It was the ref replicating what Romagnoli did to get sent off.
Okay.
So Romagnoli had clapped.
He was clapping get off the field.
No, Romagnoli had clapped at the referee and he asked why he got sent off. So the referee did the gesture back to him. I can see why it did look like that, because I thought that at first, but then it showed the replay and Romagnoli. I think it's stupid. Like, he's the captain of the club and he knows that we're entering a massive four games where we need 12 points. And he knows he's on a yellow card and... just, you know, we've lost this game, okay, chalk it off. But, Jesus, man, there's so much that just feels like it's gone wrong for us in the last few weeks, and that's something that is in his control. He can just turn around, get on with doing his job and defending, but instead gets himself sent off. And, you know, I'm not going to criticise Romagnoli's attitude on the whole. I think he's been our most consistent performer this season.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think he's our best player. I think he's our most valuable player. Just a moment of madness kind of thing there. And I didn't see many people criticising him for that. And I think that, you know, even your best and most consistent players should be held to account for what they do, especially when he's in the position that he is.
I think that people being pissed at Gattuso is... Yeah. Overshadowing his red card, because you're right. I have not seen Milan fans on Twitter are like another breed, you know, and I've not seen anything on Romagnoli's red card, which is pretty surprising.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was just one of those as well where everything was going against us that nobody was really that surprised. A lot of people blame the official. Can kind of understand that, because like I said, I think those opening three bookings that we got were very harsh, considering that the two teams were kind of fouling each other. It was a very scrappy start to the game.
It was.
And yet, you know, we ended up with three yellows. They ended up with none. That's in the first half, of course. But yeah, now that's it. He's got a 1-game ban. As far as I know, it's a 1-game ban. So we got that to contend with, which is crap. But just on that, I've got a thing up here that shows our record against the top eight sides in Serie A this season. So we've basically played 14 games against them. It's not good. It's not good. We've lost six of them. We've drawn five of them and won three of them. So, I mean...
We won both against Roma and won Napoli?
No, we... So, in order, we lost 3-2 at Napoli in the... Well, what was basically the first game of the season.
Yep.
Then we beat
Roma... so long ago.
Yeah, we beat Roma 2-1. Then we drew 2-2 with Atalanta. Then we lost 1-0 to Inter. Then we lost 2-0 at home to Juve. Then we drew 1-1 in Lazio. Drew 0-0 with Torino. Drew 0-0 with Napoli. Drew 1-1 against Roma. Won 3-1 at Atalanta. Lost the derby 3-2 to Inter. Lost 2-1 at Juve. Beat Lazio 1-0 and then lost 2-0 against Torino.
Yep. So I was thinking about Coppa Italia.
Yeah,
2-0
I know.
Win.
So that's not good, really. Especially considering it's... I mean, it's two losses to Juve in that, which at this point has almost become expected, but two derby losses and how massive they were at the time. And the two of the wins being scrappy home wins against the Rome teams... who have massively underperformed this season. I think it just feeds into this idea that, Gattuso, that's where Gattuso's shortcomings are, is his ability to coach against the other big sides and particularly mm-hmm. against more established managers than himself. You know, he's been outcoached every time by Spalletti so far, I think it would be fair to say. And, you know, you're looking at a Roma team that is now in pole position to qualify for the Champions League. They're in fourth. Oh, no, they're not anymore because Atalanta are, but Roma yep. are above us, and they've had a what their fans would call a very, you know, up and down season. They sacked a manager in that, and they've appointed one who's only going to see through until the end of the season in Ranieri. You know, there's been a lot of things that seem to have gone against them, yet there they are above us, and I think Lazio probably will fancy themselves to finish above us as well now, having overcome their sort of poor form. But we'll see how that goes with them. And yeah, it's just one of those stats that is kind of damning, really. That's the area that you need to see real improvement season on season, and it just feels like it's not been there, really. But yeah, everything seems to point towards Gattuso finishing the season as Milan boss, which kind of leads us nicely into a couple of questions that we got. First one is from a guy called @SamirMohammed72, whose actual username is ContaIn, which is quite good, like that.
I was actually looking at his profile earlier.
Yeah,
I saw a tweet that he liked. I thought it was funny.
So he says, given Gattuso is sacked, so I'm guessing he's assuming that he leaves at the end of the season, basically, should we sign Bakayoko? Because if we get either Conte or Sarri, Bakayoko would be useless. I see what he's saying there, actually, because Conte didn't like Bakayoko in his last season at Chelsea. In fact, I remember watching Huddersfield against Chelsea, and Bakayoko got subbed off, and like the Chelsea fans cheered him getting subbed off. He just did not have a good first season with them, basically, under Conte. So I can kind of see that idea. And then obviously Sarri, yeah, he was the one who ultimately sanctioned his exit. But I don't see how any incoming manager would fail to recognise the kind of influential player that Bakayoko can be. But, you know, if it is Conte or Sarri, those are probably the two where you would question whether they're willing to pay that $35 million buyout. I don't know what you think.
I have thought about this before because he's a really good player, but he's good under Gattuso. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like they're pretty similar midfielders. And I think that maybe he just didn't do well in the Premier League, because the Premier League is a hard league to play in. It's rough, and if you can't do it, you're going to get eaten alive. And Bakayoko kind of seems like a soft-spoken person. And I think that Italy is a perfect league for him, so I think no matter what, you try and buy him, and you take a chance on it, because he's our best midfielder at the moment.
He has kind of suffered a little bit in the past few weeks, I will admit that, but you know, you kind of are still, even as good as he has been, and like you say, he's been head and above our best midfielder. You do suffer a little bit from your environment, and I think everyone being so low on confidence has started to... I think he looks a little bit tired, actually, as well. You know, despite there being games where Bilia has been starting and that kind of thing. He's played a lot of football this season. But yeah, he's currently our best midfielder. What I will say to your point about the Premier League is I would like to see Bakayoko given a shot at the Premier League. You know, if you were to just sort of drop him into that Chelsea team now and see how he gets in when he gets on in the Premier League when he's got a bit of form. Because I think when he's in form, he's a completely different player to what we saw when he was actually at Chelsea. He just didn't really settle there at all. Of course, he was always going to be in the shadow of Kante, basically, and And it felt like it was one of those moves that really didn't make an awful lot of sense for Chelsea. And it didn't really work out. But like I say, if you were to drop him into most decent Premier League teams, I think he could do a job for them without a doubt. But like you say, it's a tough league. It's intense. There's no place to hide. And I think I still think he'll come in the summer. I really do.
Yeah, same.
I think all of his comments basically have indicated that he wants to be here next season. And as such, he will ask Chelsea, regardless of the transfer ban, to facilitate the move. And it just depends on whether we're willing to stump up the funds. And this also kind of leads into the next question from...
I'm going to stop you
real quick.
Chelsea, we have a purchase agreement with them.
Mm-hmm.
So we can buy him regardless, I think. They don't have to agree.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's an option to buy. It's an option to buy, which we have, which means that we can trigger it. But then there are also reports that seem to suggest other stuff, like that, you know, he might want to stay with Chelsea given their transfer ban, because he might get more opportunities. I'm guessing basically it's both a decision from Milan and the player, but you're right, everything basically points towards if we want to sign him then we can, which is good.
So I didn't think about the aspect of him wanting to go back to Chelsea to get game time.
It's unlikely because it went so badly in that first season, but like say if you look at that transfer ban now and you look at the state of Chelsea's midfield, it's not terrible, but you got to think, mm-hmm. if he impresses in pre-season, then he's definitely got another chance. And again, you think, would he rather risk it and have another shot playing in England, or would he come here where, you know, perhaps now after everything that's happened in recent weeks, he doesn't actually feel as comfortable as his comments have suggested. We don't know what's going on, but I for one hope that we do manage to sign him. Purely because of how influential he's been and how he's shown that strong mentality of overcoming the early struggles. I think there's a lot of players that could learn from him in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So leading on to the second question from @NoSwagowski. Is Bakayoko a definite buy at the end of the season, regardless of the Champions League? We kind of answered that. I think yes is the answer to that. I think we should definitely be looking to buy him regardless. But the second part of the question is interesting. If we don't qualify, who gets sold so he can stay? So I guess the assumption here is based on a few reports that have suggested we may have to sell someone in order to fund, you know, the $35 million purchase option that we have on him. I'll throw it to you first. You know, Kessié seems to be the one that gets mentioned a lot, the idea of selling him in order to keep Bakayoko. But we kind of discussed that before. Kessié is not probably one that you sell at the moment.
No. I buy Bakayoko for sure, regardless, because like I said earlier in the episode, I think this summer Elliot's going to splash some cash, get a good manager, and we're going to qualify for Champions League next season, even if we don't this season.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we sell to buy him? How much can we get for Çalhanoğlu?
Yeah, that's probably a good shout. I don't think we get our money back on him. He's probably like worth somewhere 10 to 15 million now, which is kind of mental. But he's just not had a good season. But I think what you'd be selling him to other clubs based on is his second half of last season. Where he actually looked pretty good. But he's been messed about. He's been played on the left wing. He's been played as a left centre mid. And neither of them look like they really work for him, to be honest. So that makes me wonder.
I think he plays as a centre attacking mid for Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that.
And he does it good.
That could work, but again, you're not going to shift your whole team just to fit in Çalhanoğlu, especially when it means benching Suso in all likelihood. And
Suso's been looking good lately, though.
Yeah, I must admit, he's one of the only players who I thought could hold his head up after that Coppa Italia loss. He's one who kind of tried to make things happen a little bit. But yeah, you definitely don't bench Suso or build a system around Calhanoglu that involves benching Suso at this stage. So yeah, I think he's probably one who's going to go. I think we need a couple more wingers anyway, which we've talked about. So, you know. And then, I don't really know. I mean, the idea is that we'll probably get rid of Bilia. Probably, well, Bertolacci, Mauri, and Montolivo will all be gone, so that frees up a fair bit in wages. And then you can kind of manoeuvre the budget to hopefully get back a Yoko in. And then, well, as for who you sign as like a backup midfielder, then it remains to be seen. Sensi seems to be the one who keeps getting mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Thankfully, it's not a decision that we have to make, because if the budget really is that tight that we're worrying about triggering a €35 million option, then we should perhaps be a little bit worried. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case. I think.
And Andre Silva is probably going to get sold.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that.
You know, so that's, you know.
But also, this summer is the summer that we have to pay Kessié's fee. 20
so
million.
So does that go against next year's?
I don't know how that works with regards to financial fair play. Whether it went initially when we bought him, because it was basically an obligation to buy at the end of the two-year loan. I think it might have gone against the balance sheet then. But yeah, so that is another expense to factor, though, without a doubt. But yeah, I think Andre Silva will get sold, not for what we hoped or what was built into his Sevilla loan deal as a clause, which I think was 38 million, something like that. I don't think anyone's going to pay that for him now. Yeah, I can't see anyone paying that for him now, for Andre Silva.
I honestly hold on to him.
Yeah, I can see the argument for holding on to him. And I would play with a two striker. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then you've got a rotation option then. And then obviously you probably keep Castillejo around and Barini, who can both, if absolutely necessary, say we end up in the Europa League, they could both play up front. So you're okay then. It's a difficult one. I don't know where I stand on Suso anymore, to be honest. I don't feel like it's... Before, I was... You know, when he had that good patch, particularly before Christmas, I would have been all for the club giving him a pay rise and making sure that his release clause gets raised from its current €38 million, I think it is. But now, I'm kind of like thinking, well, if a team actually wants to pay that, then could that money be better used elsewhere? I don't know. Has his career at Milan arguably gone a little bit stale? Perhaps you can't base that on the second half of this season, but the stats don't really lie. But again, we've had this discussion before about, you know, meaningful contribution might not always be on the stat sheet. You know, he could play a key pass that doesn't really get accounted for.
Right. And I actually think that Calhanoglu does a lot of that, though. I feel like he does a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't necessarily give him credit for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would be fair to say. That kind of answers that, I guess. Ideally, we don't sell anyone. Or we don't have to sell anyone to be able to afford Bakayoko. But if we do, then you sort of try and raise that from saved wage budget and possibly selling someone like Calhanoglu. That makes the most sense to me. Where else are we? The Pochettino stuff won't go away. I know we've talked about Allegri coming back. I won't give this any credit, but I mean, he did actually respond, so he's aware of the speculation. It's not a complete pipe dream. He basically said, this is the translation of it, someone asked him about going to Milan, and he said, I read that in the press, nothing else. These kind of rumours don't feed my ego. It's part of football. If we speak about an interest from other clubs, I take it as a certificate of esteem. So a lot of people angled it on him ruling himself out of it. But he didn't.
Isn't it also him and his ego? It's good for the esteem.
Yeah.
Like, you're just trying to talk all fancy, but...
Yeah, what he's saying is being linked to Milan is good. That's what he's saying, right. You know. He's kind of honoured by it. He's saying it doesn't feed his ego, don't get me wrong, but he's saying that he takes it as a certificate of esteem being linked with a club like Milan. So... Perhaps you can read between the lines a little bit there. But you did say, I read that in the press and nothing else, as if to suggest that we haven't made an approach or anything like that. But he didn't rule himself. He didn't say, I'm going to be at Spurs 100% next season. He didn't say that. I would say it was actually a pretty cryptic response. Interesting to see. I think we might make an attempt for him, you know. I imagine it to be very quickly rebuffed, but... I don't see why not.
I mean,
give it a go.
If he doesn't go to Real Madrid, I don't think he's going to come to us.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah. Yeah. We don't know if he actually rejected Real Madrid or what. We'll never know really what went down there, I don't think. But I think the most obvious next club for Pochettino is probably somewhere like Bayern if he is to move abroad, where things are already in place and he can do wonders with the young players that they've got coming through. That makes more sense than... Because obviously he's not going to go to Man United now because of Solskjaer. I don't think he'd go to somewhere like Juve if Allegri left. And if Allegri does leave, then apparently we've got as good a chance as anyone of getting him. So,
yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if there is a bit of a mini merry-go-round in managerial terms this summer and who ends up where. But I think Pochettino stays. You know, look at what he's built with Spurs. He's got them to the first Champions League semi-final. Oh, sorry, European Cup semi-final ever. I'm not actually sure. Certainly the first Champions League semi-final, though, so fair play to him. The league form has suffered a bit as such, but Jesus, like, you cannot deny what he's done there. He's completely turned them around from being kind of, not a laughing stock post Gareth Bale, but, you know, a lot of people say they didn't really spend that money wisely and suffered for it as a result, but now they're top dogs in North London, pretty much, it seems, and he's just done an incredible job there, so that's a pipe dream for us, without a doubt. I think if he is available and he shows interest, then forget any summer signings, you just throw money at him. You make sure that, you know, there's a package on the table that he can't resist, basically. But he'll want to be promised probably a couple of things, one of them being transfer budget, and it remains to be seen how much of that we have, especially if we don't finish in the top four. And number two is probably that. We'd need to be playing Champions League football next year to be able to attract a manager like that, unless Spurs were to miss out this season, in theory. But we'll see what happens there. In terms of other rumours that are probably worth discussing, there's been a lot of talk about Malcolm from Barcelona recently. Obviously, we want a winger. This, for me, fits the bill perfectly. He's exactly the kind of winger that we should be after. Quick, direct, skillful. Offers something different from what we have at the moment. And it says here that it would cost around about 45 million euros, the most recent report that we had on him. What do you reckon? Good signing that would be, or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watch Barcelona play, because I don't watch Barcelona play at all. So I don't know how good he is, but it'd be a slap in the face to Roma, so it'd be pretty.
Yeah, pretty I would cool. like. I am actually just going to look up his stats, because I don't think he's played that much.
No, he hasn't.
This season.
I remember he cried after he scored his first goal, which is cool.
Yeah, he's kind of. That's good. I could see us getting him. Oh, right. So he's played 19 appearances this season, 4 goals and 2 assists. I think he scored. Did he score against? I'm trying to think who he scored against in the Champions League. I think based on that, he's clearly not a huge part of the first team plans at the moment. Obviously, they've got players that take precedence in the forward positions. I could see us getting him on some kind of loan with option to buy formula. And if we can do that, then I'm all for it.
He scored against Inter.
That was it, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it was Inter, but it kind of slipped my mind. But yeah. I like that rumour. We'll see what happens with that. What's good, though, is that we're not aiming for nobodies in terms of wingers.
Right.
That would worry me a little bit more. For example, the stuff on Saint-Maximin and Everton seems to have gone a little bit cold. Point on that being, if you're going to spend 60 million euros on a guy who's had one good season in the French league, or you're going to spend 70 million euros on a 23-year-old Brazilian who we don't know how well he would adapt over here, for example, then you might as well spend 40, 45 million on Malcolm, who has been pretty impressive, I would say, from what I've seen of him. I think that's just, wait, what's the next game we've got? We've got Bologna at home on it's a week today, so the next podcast that we record will be pretty much straight after the game, which is good because we'll have more stuff fresh in our memory, I guess, and just praying, touch wood, that we can be talking about a win in that. Briefly on that game, do you see it being another banana skin for us, or?
Oh, man. I think we'll take it. I've said that the last three games. I think it's going to be another scrappy one. I don't think the game's going to be handed to us, but I think that we will get all 3 points here. I think the team's back is against the wall,
yeah,
and they can't slip any farther down the table without being completely humiliated.
Yeah.
I think Piontek starts, him and Suso score, we win 2-0.
Hmm. Yeah, the one thing that worries me is that we always look now like conceding a goal, whereas before we had, you know, I can't remember up until what date, but like the best defensive record in 2019 in Europe's top five leagues or something stupid up until a certain point, but now we're leaking goals left, right and centre. Romagnoli will be out for this game. See them scoring a goal. Whether they score the first goal or not could have a huge, huge impact, because this is a crowd now. This is a fan base that is incredibly restless. And you feel like if we fall behind or we concede an equaliser or whatever it may be, the stadium can turn very quickly, as we've seen in recent years when things have been a little bit tough. So this is going to be one where...
Let me look at the table. Sorry, go ahead.
This is going to be one where, you know, it's all about playing the atmosphere right. It's about getting an early goal. I say this every week, but yeah, early goal, get an early goal just to calm the nerves and then hopefully play ourselves into a little bit of form. But it's not going to be easy. I mean, Bologna have gone from being in the midst of a relegation battle to actually steering themselves 8 points clear of it. And they've had a couple of impressive results in recent weeks. They've got some good players. I like Orsolini, and, you know, they've got a couple of good young players on loan. I think... I can't remember what our record against them is like recently, but...
I can pull it up.
Yeah.
But this weekend, Torino play Juve, Atalanta Lazio, and Roma Genoa.
Christ.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Well...
That is this week. So we've won 3 of the last 5.
Juve will always want to win the derby, so...
Or 4 of the last 5.
Okay, that's pretty good. So my thinking is Juve will always want to win the derby. We've got to hope that they take care of business against Torino, meaning that if we get any result, we go back above them.
Yep.
Roma will probably beat Genoa at home, but Genoa aren't quite yet clear of relegation, but they also haven't won in their last, well, more than 5 games. So I think Roma will probably win that. And then Lazio-Atalanta's an interesting one. Are Atalanta at home? Lazio are at home. So, if that could be a draw or something, and we can pick up 3 points, things look a little bit more optimistic. Just a little bit. But then, obviously, we follow that up with a trip to Fiorentina, which isn't going to be easy. So, yeah.
I'll tell you what, this last week, the last week is going to be crazy. Because we're playing Spal, then Lazio Torino, Atalanta Sassuolo, that's going to be a good one, Roma Parma.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't like this.
it seems stressful. It seems difficult now. I think we're probably guilty ourselves on this podcast of looking too far ahead. You know what I mean? Looking at like the last six games and saying, well, we just sort of need to win four of them because everyone else is playing each other. And in reality, it's just not that simple. It's never been that simple with us. It's just one game at a time. We've got to win a week today to get some confidence back. And then we go from there. And then we got to go and face our old boss in Montella at Fiorentina. Yep. So it's like,
We faced Mihajlovic too at Bologna, right?
Yep.
Is Mihajlovic at Bologna?
I believe so. Oh no, he's not. Oh wait, or is he? Bologna manager. Yeah, he is there. Yeah, he is. Sorry, yeah. He took over from Pipo. Yeah, he did, yeah. He took over from Pipo in January. So that's funny. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one then. Imagine them two doing a job on us.
Yeah, I know.
It's just all turned to fear now, isn't it? Yeah, so exciting times. Hopefully we've got a win to talk about in a week. Because otherwise,
I hope so.
Otherwise, we might have to just call this off.
I'll say I think we should just shut the website down at that point.
Yeah, I think we would. Yeah, yeah. Sempre Atalanta coming soon. yeah. Well, I don't know if you've got any closing thoughts, mate. I think we touched on quite a lot there.
I think we got it all in.
Yes, very good stuff. And hopefully, we'll have AJ back with us next week. Hopefully, the move goes all right and everything. For him, so
I mean, he has a home now. He was homeless for about a week,
that's good that he has a roof over his head now, because he looks homeless without it. So,
well, he looks homeless with it too.
Yes,
so.
Sorry, that's what that's why it was good. Yeah,
so you know, clean yourself up, AJ.
Yes, basically. Right, anyway, before we end it here, I want to send a special thank you to our sponsors, Eurofantasy League. Make sure to check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on the fun. And once again, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilping Chronicle for some more specific Milan-based rants. And I've been joined by loyal guest Madison / co-host / whatever.
Yeah, I'll say guess. What is this?
Yeah,
I've been on all season, man. Put some respect on my name. But it's been fantastic speaking with you. Hopefully we can review a win coming up here next week. Yeah. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will see you in a week's time. Goodbye.